Our world is at the crossroads, and we have a choice, right and wrong. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. You know, many of us find ourselves at a certain crossroads in life, that either-or time that demands a decision. And many people feel our world is at a crossroads, and we have a decision to make. In just a moment, Kenneth tells us about a crossroads in the life of Jacob that would be the dividing line between everything that came before and after this point in his life.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be with you. We are going to look at an important turning point in the life of Jacob. And this happened at a place called Jabbok. That's the name of the stream or the little river that he had to cross that significant night with his entire household. And we read of this account in the first book of the Bible in Genesis, chapters 32 and 33. We're not going to look at the whole life of Jacob as recorded in that book, but just this climactic turn in his life story. And this, in fact, makes good material for a movie. It's only about a window of some 24 hours, but that changed him for life, when everything was whittled down to a confrontation between just him and God. And then following that, a confrontation between him and his elder twin brother Esau. This was really Jacob's midlife crisis, and it's a turning point where he met with God and faced God, and he had to meet with and face himself as the schemer. And finally, he had to meet Esau as the one he had schemed and sinned against in the past. Jabbok was the name of the stream that they had to cross, and it means running or flowing, but also emptying and pouring out. There was actually no description of the actual crossing itself, unlike the crossing of the Red Sea by Israel under the hand of Moses. But the importance of this episode is in what it represented or what it signified in Jacob's life. It was really a demarcation between what was before this point in his life and what happened after that. And that's always the nature of turning points. We are going to consider three phases of his experience as recorded in these two chapters of Genesis, chapters 32 and 33. And we are going to name these three phases simply after the names of the places where they happened as recorded in the passage. And the first phase we shall call Mahanaim. And this is a name which we will come across in this first section which we are going to consider in Genesis chapter 32, verse 1 to 21. Let me just start by reading the first two verses of chapter 32. So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. The name Mahanaim means two camps or two hosts. It refers to God's camp, as he said, "This is God's camp," and then his own camp for his household and his families. And I suppose he said this with the backdrop of having run away and delivered from the camp of his scheming uncle Laban. For a long time, in fact, for the past 20 years of his life, there was just Laban's camp and his camp. And he lived his past 20 years in servile submission to his uncle Laban, who proved more than a match for his own scheming ways. Jacob thought he was smart all along. But here was someone that God placed in his life who outwitted him at times. And Jacob was to learn that his own wisdom doesn't always work and that it has its limitations. It can only get you so far. Well, it's a great feeling to be finally on his way, to be free from the subjection to oppression, which he had suffered in silence for such a long time. It says in verse 1, he went on his way. He felt free to do what he wanted and to go where he wanted at long last. But then it says in the same verse, and the angels of God met him. They were no doubt sent by God to keep him from reverting to his old ways and to direct his path towards God. If we are truly going on in God's way, there is always a great ease and peace within us. But if we are going about our own way, it will not be long before we come up against things which leave us with doubt and anxiety. Let's read on from verse 3. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau. Thus your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants. And I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight. Now, what would you talk about first to somebody you have not met for 20 years, especially if it is a member of your own family, one of your siblings? I suppose the immediate and the first thing would not be to talk about or to ask about how much material possessions you or the other has acquired, but really about yourself and about the welfare of the other person. That would be the normal, logical way we would go about it. We would ask something like, how are you? Rather than, how much have you? But that was not the answer that he instructed his servants to tell Esau when they met him. Instead, he asked them to say where he had spent the last 20 years, and that is with Laban, and what he had amassed or acquired in terms of material possessions for himself. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants. And this is what I've sent to tell you. So old Jacob was still in his element. He's always been occupied with getting. And so this statement of his showed that he still hoped to find favor through material things. I have sent to tell my Lord that I may find favor in your sight. That has always been attracted and drove and motivated him, getting things for himself. And he thought this would be the way to gain favor from someone else, that they could be impressed by and their favor bought over with things. When he first left home some 20 years ago to escape from the wrath of his elder twin brother Esau, he had a dream. We read about that a couple of chapters back in Genesis chapter 28, verse 10. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night, because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head. And he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. What a wonderful dream that was, and it was a dream given by God, which spoke of his purpose and promise for him. It wasn't just an idle or a fading dream to bring relief and comfort to a fearful young man. But that night, it all looked very different. He seemed to have returned now with a nightmare instead, as he prepared himself for the dreaded confrontation with his brother Esau, whom he had cheated years ago. That wonderful dream that he was given such a long time ago seems to be turning into a nightmare for him right now. It's something that he had dreaded and avoided and ran away from for the past 20 years, but he could no longer run away from it anymore. He had to face his fears and deal with what he had dreaded all along once and for all. Reading on the story from Genesis 32 in verse 6, then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he also is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels, into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape. When he got word from his men who had just returned from their first meeting with Esau, and that he was coming to meet them with 400 men, Jacob began to read the situation according to his own fears. Our preoccupations determine our perceptions. Now, a 400-man reception party, like a guard of honor, would of course be welcome. But this was the furthest thing from Jacob's mind. It certainly sounds more like a 400-man show of force by his brother Esau to settle old scores. Now, that's something to be really afraid of. So his fears drove him to that conclusion, which in turn drove him to a certain course of action. He began to revert to his natural instinct and disposition, which is always to outwit his enemy. He had always been the ultimate schemer and strategist, and so we find him here in action again. The significance of the name Mahanaim, meaning two camps or companies, now took on a new relevance of his scheme and strategy to divide his flocks and herds and his family into two companies, as it says in verse 7. The whole idea here was very simple. It's not to divide and conquer, but it works the same way in reverse. It's to divide and escape. Losing one is better than losing all. Strategies which are concocted by ourselves are always prefaced by an if. This is the language in scenario planning. If something happens, then we do this. If something else happens, then we do that. Scenario or contingency planning according to human wisdom. And that was his mode of thinking, reflected in verse 8. If Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape. We try in our own mind an effort to pluck all possibilities by devising all kinds of if-then statements. But try as we might to exhaust all possibilities, we are still operating within the box of our own limited intelligence and thinking. It's a good thing always to remind ourselves that there is at least always one other factor that is beyond our comprehension or understanding that we may have never thought of at all. And that may be the critical or most important factor of all. And if that is so, it will render instantly as irrelevant all our assumptions and premeditated actions and solutions. So beware of allowing trust and faith in God to be thrust aside by your own reasoning and scheming. Let's continue with verse 9 to see what happened. Genesis 32, verse 9. Then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. And in verse 11, here is a prayer for deliverance. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother and from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Here we find Jacob praying, really praying, perhaps for the first time. And notice that he prayed only after his own planning and preparing. But it should really be the reverse. We should plan only after praying, so that the basis of our planning and preparing is God's will and God's way. Listen to what John Bunyan, the Puritan author of the great Christian classic Pilgrim's Progress, said. You can do more than pray after you have prayed, but you cannot do more than pray until you have prayed, which speaks so eloquently of this point. And so often we find ourselves doing just that, don't we? Like Jacob, we make all the preliminary calculations, we figure out how it might happen and what we should do to respond to it. We try to cover all the corners and possibilities. We make our plans, we have thought it through, we've made all the preparations, put in place the contingency plans, and then we come to pray and ask God to execute our plans. We ask God to bless what I have concocted. We ask God to do as we have said, not the other way around, which is doing as God has said. What a parody that we can make of prayer. Jacob had to pray to the God of his father Abraham and the God of his father Isaac, probably because he had not the confidence to pray to the God of Jacob. He had never really proven God in prayer in the past in his personal history. He was never more desperate in his life, and this was probably Jacob's first true and real prayer. You know, back in Genesis chapter 28, where we read from just now, that was 20 years ago, when he left home to run away from the consequences of his scheming and cheating, he had this dream or vision from God, which we read about earlier. Continuing from where we left off earlier about this dream in Genesis 28, verse 13, "Behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and the east, to the north and the south. And in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you." Verse 16, "Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Then Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, which means house of God. But the name of that city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." Now I have read all that to give us the drift of Jacob's reasoning when he spoke to God in turn, which is supposedly what prayer is. But you know, that wasn't a prayer at all. He did not really pray, but he made a deal with God, or a vow. He struck a deal with God, and as usual, he was the one doing the wheeling and the dealing. He was calling the shots. He was dictating the terms to God, and that right after what God had his purpose and his promise for him in the future. It's the same kind of if-then reasoning and statement. If God will be with me, if God will keep me in this way that I'm going, if God will give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. It's on his terms and conditions. It's almost like he's saying, if you serve me, then you shall be my God. And how often we have been just like that too. And it takes God a long time and much dealing with us to turn around our recalcitrant position. We are all inveterate schemers. We are all obstinate and stiff-necked bosses of our own lives until God turns us around and makes us see that He is Lord and we are the servants. And so back to our passage in Genesis chapter 32, we find Jacob praying a genuine heartfelt prayer but superimposed on his own plans. For in his prayer he said, "I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies, Mahanaim." But that was the result of his own devising and making. It was a part of his contingency plan. After he had committed to God and asked for his deliverance, we read in verse 13, "So he lodged there that same night and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau his brother, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals." That's quite a procession of presents. Verse 16, "Then he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, Pass over before me and put some distance between successive droves. And he commanded the first one, saying, When Esau my brother meets you and asks you, saying, To whom do you belong and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you? Then you shall say, They are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, he also is behind us. So he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, In this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him, and also say, Behold, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present went on over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. These were his detailed instructions. It's a sort of operations order for the execution of his plan. He divided his entire household into three cohorts with the advance message that he's coming after them. And he did all this for the purpose of prolonging his actual meeting with Esau so as to pacify him and to prepare the way with presents ahead of him. He had done all he could. He had made the plans, the preparations, and he had prayed. Will it work out in the way that he had hoped? Or will all his plans fall to the ground in spite of all that he had done? Stay tuned for the second part of this message tomorrow. And until then, may the Lord's presence continue to refresh you and His word continue to reach you.
Jacob had been set free from subjection to Laban and the oppression that went with that relationship. But he was not set free to do whatever he wanted to do. And neither are we. Thank you for that word, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow when Kenneth brings us part two of Jacob at Jabbok. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a comment or a question for Ken. Simply send us a text message to 94313813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915714. And Times of Refreshing is on Facebook, and you can go there to get the latest updates, socialize with the Times of Refreshing fans, and take some time to give us your views right on our Facebook page. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, to listen to this or any of the other programs right online. And by the way, Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app, and it will allow you to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.